When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Caged In. I am Petros Patsilivas and I am watching every single Nicolas Cage film to find out, is he the greatest actor of all time or is he just a Neanderthal who deserves to be left in the past? It's been a while since we've been on the Cage train, but as there is a UK release of The Croods, A New Age, it's time to return to Cage and talk about this film. On this episode, I was joined by Super Marcy of the Super Network, a fantastic network of Australian podcasts that you really check out. As always, we will be talking about this film in all its gory details. So if you haven't seen it, if you're in the UK, head out to cinemas right now, or if you're, I guess, like America and Canada and Australia, you can get this on rental or it's not streaming anywhere that I know of. If it is, there is a handy document in the show notes that will tell you if and where it is streaming. If you want a bit more of this conversation with Marcy as well, we go a bit deeper into Nicolas Cage and talk about her worst ever Nick Cage film. What is the film she detests that Nick Cage has been in? What is his objective best performance in a film? And which living or dead director would she like to see him work with? You can get that conversation if you head on over to patreon.com/cagedinpod. And it's as little as like £2.50, $3 a month to get a whole host of bonus chats, whether it is on the Cage stuff or even the Coppola connections. There's, yeah, plenty of Nick Cage chat to keep your appetite whetted until we get another Nick Cage film, which isn't long. We have Pig coming out in the UK on the 20th of August, and I'm currently running the Caged In Pig cast as well. I'm talking to people who are involved in that film, whether it's behind or in front of the camera. Last Friday, I released an episode with David Nell, who has a key scene opposite Nick Cage and Alex Wolff playing Chef Finway. So if you've seen the film, definitely check that episode out. If you haven't, it's there waiting for you when that film releases. And not blowing my own trumpet, but I think it's a great interview, and I kind of like this fact of getting these people who are not the stars. Obviously, I'm aiming to get the stars. If you know Nick Cage and you listen to this podcast, tell him I would love to speak to him. So, all that's left to do is to gather up your family, sleep in a massive pile, and look for a new tomorrow as we get raging with Cage. We're back to talk about Nick Cage, so what better than to talk about a belated sequel to an animated film that came out 8 years ago? It's time to get to know that prehistoric pack once again with Joe Crawford's The Croods, A New Age. To join me in the search for tomorrow is writer and podcaster Super Marcy. How are you, Marcy?
Hello, doing well. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
It's an absolute pleasure. I'm glad we could work out like the time zone difference, because it's always been like a hesitation for me. Like there's like when someone's like, oh yeah, I'm podcasting in Australia, and I'm like, does that mean I'm gonna have to get up super early? But this has worked out perfectly fine.
It's actually not too bad.
Yeah. It's like, so it's what, evening for you, morning for me. This is probably the most sprightly I've ever been for this time of the day. So so as I like to start all of these off, get it straight out there, are you a Nick Cage fan?
Not at all, no.
The podcast's over.
No, I am unashamedly a big Nick Cage fan.
There's no shame to be had. What is it about Cage that kind of, like, I don't know, excites you, like keeps you coming back for more?
Well, he does excite me because he's Nicolas Cage. He's that unique man. I don't know. There's always been kind of an allure about Nick Cage, because growing up, like seeing the stuff in the 90s and that, he's like so different in every movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of those films were so much fun, even if they were different from each other, like whether it was the action ones or the comedies. And I think that appeal is that he was always so different, playing so many different characters, but he like manages to fully immerse himself in these roles. So he's so, I think, different. you get a lot of different stuff with Nick Cage, even if some of it might be the same, it's still very different.
Yeah.
I guess growing up, I probably had the hots for him. Maybe I still
don't worry.
But who doesn't?
He's got that kind of like I don't know, charismatic charm that like I guess a lot of people would say like he's unconventionally attractive, but I think he like he's I don't know, he's got an allure to him certainly.
There is something very appealing about him.
I guess it's like there's that bad boy thing that you know that like on a whim he'll buy a castle and a dinosaur skull like if he fancies it, and it's like something dangerous and mysterious about that.
Absolutely.
What are your views on the kind of like Nikonissance that we're having recently? Like, he kind of seems to be like out of his straight to VOD slump and kind of back into the mainstream. Are you excited about seeing like a new age of Cage?
Look, I don't think he's really stopped. I think the VOD was just, you know, paying the bills. But still, even if they were crap, there's still something there that's watchable. Yeah. But he's making the really interesting and unexpected choices with his roles. Like he will go from, you know, what we've seen in Mandy to the wackiness of Willy's Wonderland, and I'm all here for it.
Yeah. Well, I recently got in like a kind of Twitter debate with someone because they made the claim that a lot of Nick Cage fans say that he never misses, that he never like phones it in, which like I think I don't think any Nick Cage fan is saying that. Like, what are your opinions on like the fact that like, I don't know. I think that's what makes him exciting, right? Is that he's this infallible. He's not infallible. He's kind of, he can do wrong. And like, that's what's exciting about a Nick Cage film, right?
I feel like Nick Cage doesn't give a shit if it's good or bad. And his stuff is so divisive. Like something I might personally love that he's done, someone else will absolutely hate.
Yeah.
And it could be for the same reasons that I love it, that they hate it. Or anything, like I could absolutely love something for completely different reasons to what you love something for.
Yeah.
Like he has had really shit films.
Yeah.
But and at least he tries to do something.
Yeah. I guess there's like a handful of ones where it's like he's just turned up for the paycheck. And I think like Left Behind is a prime example of that. Like, you could have a cardboard cutout of Nick Cage and it would probably be just as effective as the man himself in that role.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I don't, like, things to my theory, I've always said about that film, it's like he's scared about, like, the fans of, like, the book and that, because obviously it's, like, a religious film and stuff like that. He's like, am I going to upset the Christians by going full Nick Cage in this movie?
Yeah.
So let's find out, what was the first Nick Cage film you remember seeing?
That's tough. I'm not 100% sure what it could have been. Like, I obviously have, like, you know, those memories of the Con Air face off the Rock, that kind of mid-90s, but I'm sure there would have been something before that, and I'm really trying to think of what it might have been. Oh, I mean, the man has had been in so much stuff. But what could it have possibly... I don't want to say it was one of those, because I know there was something earlier than that, but I can't quite remember. I'm just trying to look back and think, what would I have seen back before then? You know what? It could have been something like Guarding Tess. Around that era would have been...
As
a kid.
And that's
like that, I think.
That's a real vanilla, like, kind of Nick Cage film, right? That's kind of a bit like, I don't know, I've only ever watched it the once. I found it like quite a boring, laborious task to get through it. It's like, it's not really like the calling card for Nick Cage, really. It kind of feels like, I don't know, especially it's around a time that, like, he'd already put out Wild at Heart and was on the precipice of becoming this 90s action star.
It's kind of one of those in-between movies, yes. But I do have memories of seeing that, but I think more the attention was coming in with, like, I think I might have seen Con Air first or Amazing. Face Off. I can't remember quite which one.
What was it about those?
Those would have been,
What was it about those two that kind of made you think, like, were you, when you saw, like, Con Air and Face Off, were you like, I'm in now, I'm like a Nick Cage fan, or was it a slow burn to become a Nick
Cage
fan?
It was immediate. Those two films were so much fun, and I would just watch them, like, constantly, and I might have been 12-ish when they came out, I can't remember.
Yeah.
I forget how old I am, so who knows, I could have been older, younger, Lord knows, but yeah, I'd watch it all the time, and they were just so much fun. And then it was kind of discovering, like, more Nick Cage films, and that's when I kind of saw the earlier stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of when, kind of as I knew more about him, he was kind of like a pretty big star.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it kind of comes in, like, oh, you know, he's a Coppola. It's like, oh, shit, okay.
Yeah, that's always, like, the amount of people who say to me, like,
still,
why
don't know,
or like, yeah, why are you now looking at the Coppola family? I'm like, well, Nick Cage is a part of them. It's like, I need to I want to understand him a bit better by understanding his family. Like, well, how did this kind of, I don't know, weird anomaly of nepotism and kind of, like, just so many talented people in this one family. Is there any standout films from that kind of his early films that, like, once you started diving back in, you were like, like, I can see the guy, do you know what I mean? I can see the seeds of the guy we eventually get, Nick Cage.
It would have been Wild at Heart, definitely,
mm-hmm.
because that was kind of around, you know, kind of high school-ish, going down that whole, like, learning about David Lynch and stuff. So it was obviously through wanting to discover David Lynch. I'm like, oh, Nicolas Cage is in a David Lynch movie. But seeing that film, his performance, I was like, holy shit, it's so fucking amazing. Like, I don't know what the fuck he's doing half the time, but it's brilliant and I love it. And there's pretty much no turning back. Like, Vampire's Kiss is insane. But something like, is it Peggy Sue Got Married is, again, it's so fucking different, but he's great in it. And even... Rumblefish,
mm-hmm.
as well with like who's the star of that movie?
Matt Dillon and Mickey Rourke.
Yeah, yes. My head's gone blank. No. But yeah, you know, things like that with the smaller roles. And then, you know, what was coming out then? Like, it was just, he was popping up everywhere. There's suddenly, yeah. Oh, he's Snake Eyes. And it's like, yeah, that wasn't too bad. 8mm, well, that was fucked up.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
Bringing out the dead. Well, holy shit, dude. Like, wow.
I always like mention on this podcast that like I find it crazy of all of the like absolutely like iconic directors that Nick Cage has worked with, and it seems interesting because a lot of them it's like they're quote unquote like in between films. Do you know what I mean? Like bringing out the dead. That like it doesn't kind of get brought up in the Martin Scorsese conversation.
Yeah,
and even like A Peggy Sue Got Married. It's like when people think of Francis Ford Coppola, they'll lean more towards that like 70s run of the two Godfathers, The Conversation and Apocalypse Now, whereas like by the time you get to Peggy Sue Got Married, people are like, we don't talk about that. But what's really interesting about Cage specifically in that film, and kind of there's a few films around the 80s where it's like he's making choices. Like he, do you know what I mean? He's like, you can tell even from that age, he's like, I've got a vision of who this character is. And Peggy Sue Got Married is a prime example with that, like voice he insisted on doing throughout the whole film.
And whatever voice he was doing in Vampire's Kiss, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love it. I don't know. It's so amazing.
I could talk about Vampire's Kiss. For absolute days. I'm a massive
Me too.
Yeah, I'm a massive defender for that film, even though I don't personally feel like it needs defending because it is.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Like I did have that whole discussion on a podcast. What do we do? I think we talked about Vampire's Kiss and Willy's Wonderland as like the double bill. And I had all these interesting things to say, and I'm like, it makes such a good like double feature with American Psycho.
Yeah, that
and I still stand by that, and I think like that's the natural one.
There's like a kind of, it's like that perfectly to like we're going to be talking about the Croods, but like you look at that like evolution of man. It's like you got Peter Lowe, and then like the next evolutionary step is Christian Bale's character, Patrick Bateman in American, and then even like I think it was like last year there was that Joe Keery film Spree, and then that feels like a kind of another evolution of that for like the next generation. Do you know what I mean? Like the kind of Gen Z streaming generation of like here's your new sociopath who's like obsessed with themselves and just wants fame and money or whatever. Which is your favorite Nick Cage film? I know it's going to be a hard one. It's going to be like picking your favorite child, but which is your favorite Nick Cage film?
All of them. it's so hard. Like, do I say Con Air just out of being sentimental? Like, I don't know. What would I really pick? It's so hard. I haven't seen Pig yet, and I could pick that.
Yeah.
That's... You know. I mean, you know, more recently, like, obviously everybody does talk about Mandy and The Color Out of Space, like, amazing shit. But you know what? I said Wild at Heart, so let's just say Wild at Heart.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, what?
You know what?
You touched on Wild at Heart slightly. Like, what is it about that film that kind of, like, stands out to be, like, your favourite? Like his performance or the film as a whole?
I think it's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's the whole film. Like the chemistry, between him and Laura Dern is just so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the way it's like kind of fairy tale story is told through the weird lens of David Lynch, and Cage just goes with it in that film. And the whole thing with the snakeskin jacket, I fucking love it so much.
Yeah,
I was going to attempt to do like a,
the speech.
A Nick Cage pressure, but I'm like, no, I'm not doing it. It's so bad. But no, I guess that would, I'd say that because I guess like, I guess like Con Air or something. There's a lot of sentimental stuff with that film. But yeah, if I had to choose Wild at Heart.
I'm always glad that I'm asking these questions instead of answering them, because like being entrenched in Nick Cage, my answer will probably change like every half hour, or like I'll just be
expecting I'll come back to this and go, no, I think I'm going to pick something else.
I always feel like sometimes I just want to be a little bit of a smart ass as well. I'm like, oh, let's say Red Rock West, because it's like one that nobody's ever heard of, like, or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Talk
like
about ridiculous.
Like, yeah, talk about like the undiscovered gems. So we've established you're a Nick Cage fan. We've established which is your favorite Nick Cage film. Let's talk about his new movie, The Croods 2.
My name's Eep.
Bring it, stop.
It's news.
And we're the world's first family, the Croods.
Another glorious morning.
Dad always says the pack stays together.
That's my girl.
Seatbelt mode.
Now we're searching for a perfect place to call home.
What the heck is that?
It's the end of the world. Dun, dun,
dun. Well, that's it for me. I'm glad it's you, Chunky.
Wow. Isn't it strange how this food grows in perfectly straight...
Genius.
I thought cave people died off years ago.
We happy meet you.
Thanks.
Oh. We are the Bettermans.
Better man?
Emphasis on the better.
Is that your home?
Kind of big, isn't it?
Hey, girl.
Another teenage girl.
Yeah?
A girl.
Friend! I've never had a girlfriend before.
Me neither, me either.
What do we do?
How do we say to each other?
Without any car voices.
Where are we getting on?
I don't know if cave people belong in a modern world.
What's your problem, big guy?
This place is changing everyone.
Guy?
And we really need to limit Thunk's window time.
Not now, Douglas. The birds are on.
In my day, we didn't stare at birds. We fought them.
Let me live my life.
Whoa, what's that?
It's just a scar.
Every mark is an adventure.
And my dad doesn't even know about this one.
Whoa, peanut toe. You're not allowed outside the wall?
Nope.
This farm is like your cave. You're just like me. I feel like taking chances. You see that wall?
Yeah.
You want to jump in?
Yeah.
We'll be back before anyone knows.
So what was it that made you pick The Croods 2 to come talk about, apart from my tweet just saying, like, can somebody come talk about this movie? Were you a fan of the original?
I really didn't mind it. I thought it was a pretty fun movie. And I was very excited that Mr. Cage was voicing, you know, the dad character in the family.
Mm-hmm.
So I did already see it, but the second one, but I've rewatched it in prep again. But I think it's actually a really fun follow-up, like a really good follow-up. I think it's very solid. And I actually really like what, like everyone brought to the table with their voice work and the animation work. But I particularly think I liked the two dads interacting. I think it was great.
So let's talk about some stats on this. You talked about like the voice cast. So this is, as I said, directed by Joel Crawford. It's written by Kevin Hagman, Dan Hagman, and Paul Fisher. And stars, the cast list for this is absolutely stacked, right? So the man himself, Nick Cage as Grug, Emma Stone as Eep, Ryan Reynolds as Guy, Catherine Keener as Ugga, Cloris Leachman as Gran, Clark Duke as Funk, Leslie Mann as Hope Betterman, Peter Dinklage as Phil Betterman, Kelly Marie Tran as Dawn Betterman. And it kind of like, yeah, that is a pretty stacked cast, right? We've got kind of like... some amazing character actors. And I think that's what's really exciting about this. Both of these films. I remember, like, the first one, I kind of slept on it for so long in the fact, like, I just didn't watch it. And then, like, when it got around to covering it on the podcast, I was like, wow, that cast is pretty amazing. And I think it's even more amazing so now that, like, I don't know, that that not only did they, like, the original cast, like, oh, we're up for doing it, they managed to, like, get Peter Dinklage and, like, Leslie Mann and Kelly Marie Tran in as well. It could have so easily have been, I don't know, like, have, like, straight to video vibes, but it doesn't mean
it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it did at all.
So, I always like to ask people to give a brief synopsis about the film. Do you mind telling us what this film is about?
I'll do my best.
But our
family unit from the first film, they stumble upon a new area, which is kind of fenced off. So they go through the fence, but there's a new kind of family who know Guy. They were like his previous family. And then having two different families from two different worlds causes all sorts of mischief and mayhem until there's a monster.
That's
my really good synopsis.
So let's talk about the opening, because, like, the opening to this, we start with a flashback of...
back to the first one.
Well, Guy's parents, like, dying in, like, a tar pit, basically. Like,
yeah.
What are your thoughts on that opening and kind of, like, it's a pretty dark place to start for what is... extensively a kids' movie, right?
For generally what is, like, a very light-hearted film. But it is very kind of sad and tragic, and you can really feel sorry for Guy, even if he's a bit of a, you know, crazy boy.
One of the things I got from, like, this in the intro in this film, especially when we get them, like, the introduction to the Croods and them riding around on their massive, like, multicolored tiger.
Yeah.
Is it felt like, I don't know, it had like a Guardians of the Galaxy vibe to me. And that might be because it's got that, like, Partridge Family, I Think I Love You, like, needle drop in that it kind of, like, and, like, it utilizes, like, kind of slow motion and, like, freeze frame and stuff like that. And it's kind of like, it feels like a great way to, like, reintroduce us to those characters, right?
And
as you mentioned, we get that like that overlapping of the first, we almost get a recap of the first film, right?
So we cut, it kind of cuts back to, like, what's happened, which it focuses on that relationship with Guy and Eep. I'm so bad with the character names because they're like sounds and I keep forgetting who's who. But it's very sweet, and you know that they, like, kind of got together, he joined their pack, and now you're seeing the pack still kind of has a few problems because Dad doesn't quite accept Guy yet.
Well, yeah, obviously, like, his whole thing is, and I think the thing that the first film dealt with was Grug's unwillingness to accept the future, and, like, whereas, I don't know, I think this one, thematically, I got, like, some, it felt like it was very lightly dealing with, like, the idea of, like, gentrification and kind of, like, people, like, coming in and, like, not ruining the old world, but, like, I don't know, we get it with that kind of, like, B plot with the Punch Monkeys, and, like, it turns out that, like, Phil Betterman has come in with his, like, wants to make his thing better, so essentially stealing their water, which has stopped them from being able to have, like, bananas and stuff like that. And it deals with this thing of class, which I think is, like, interesting in a kids movie. It kind of subtly does it, where it's like, obviously the Bettermans, like, think they, like, to them, they know they are better than the crudes, and like kind of lord it about them, flip-flopping about in their like flip-flops, and they've got all their gizmos and gadgets of the new age. So what do you let's talk about the voice cast, like individually, like we'll get to Cage eventually, but let's talk about the new additions. What do you think of Peter Dinklage, Leslie Mann, and Kelly Marie Tran in this film?
I thought they were all really good. I actually really enjoyed what they brought to, you know, these new characters and how they kind of portrayed them. And Peter Dinklage was so good. Every time the character of Phil is on, it's just so funny. He has like the right kind of, it's the right interactions with everyone. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's the same with Leslie Mann.
Yeah.
And because she has like such a distinct voice, you just know it's her. And it's so hard to like not picture it as being her, but you know it's her. But she's so good. I think she's so great when she does like voice work. She's so good. And absolutely loved Kelly Marie Tran. I mean, I haven't seen Raya, but I've heard very good things about her work in that as well. But I thought she was wonderful as the daughter Dawn.
Yeah.
And I have to say, the on-the-nose naming of Betterman, like, it's just, it's not subtle at all, it's amazing. That I loved with this too.
Yeah.
But the Bettermans were freaking awesome. I really did enjoy what they brought with the characters, and I enjoyed the characters. They were really freaking good and funny, and they had their emotional moments. It was great.
One of the things I've seen like leveled at this in regards to criticism is a lot of is people saying that like this is one of those cases like that happens a lot in animation, is that there are clear jokes that are aimed specifically at an adult audience, and it feels like the rest of it, like all the spectacle and the color, is there for the kids. Like, what are your views on that kind of like? On films doing that, is it a cop out in some way? Like, what do you think of that kind of?
I think it depends on the film and how they kind of portray kind of the adult jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're all definitely there, but a joke of something like having the name Betterman, I think even a very young kid can kind of get what they're going for.
Yeah.
So I think something in that way, like at least, like kids are going to kind of get an inkling about it.
Yeah.
The adults are going to be like, oh yeah, the clever one. But I don't necessarily think this one was too packed with though, like more specific kind of grown-up humor, I guess.
Yeah. I guess.
I feel like this is kind of more level-headed where the jokes could kind of translate easily enough for its audience. But I guess that's just maybe how I saw it. Mm-hmm. But other animated films definitely have a lot of that, and it's very on the nose.
Yeah.
And maybe too grown up for kids to understand. But I think at least in this context, like, I think you kind of get the point in a way.
I think what this film does really well in its kind of jokes and stuff like that is manages to eke out some more jokes in a kind of really well-trodden path of that, like a group coming into like a new situation and kind of being their eyes open to something, or like very it's very thinly veiled like gags that like talk about nowadays as well. Like, we've got Funk and his obsession with the window and stuff like that, and it's that stuff, like, it doesn't become like tiresome and stuff like that. And I think, like,
what
this film has going for it massively is the fact that you do have these really charismatic and like seasoned character actors that are doing the voices. One of the things I really wanted to talk about is your thoughts on the kind of, this film to me like has very like, again, it's I think it's done well because it's quite subtle, but like and again doesn't feel forced, but like the feminist messaging in this, because obviously we get this whole like subplot where the men are the ones who have been kidnapped trapped and kind of being taken to the Punch Monkeys, and then it is put upon the group of women. And even then, like, the one man they have with them, or the male character they have with them, is Funk, and he is, for all intents and purposes, useless. Yeah. And we get introduced to the greatly named Thunder Sisters, which is again like fantastic. What are your views on this kind of feminist messaging we get in the Croods?
I definitely picked up on it, and I actually found that to be kind of a lot of fun, because it does mix up the usual tropes where it's the guys that have been kidnapped and the girls have got to like sort out their kind of issues and come together and to end up saving the day. And I like that it kind of changes that up, and it makes it a very natural thing. And where if you've got I forgot the Leslie Mann character. I forget the freaking character's name.
Leslie Mann is Hope Betterman.
That's right. So, Hope kind of is very hesitant to, because she finds the Croods as very crude, obviously. And this is kind of her lesson to be like, not everything you're doing is really even necessary. Mm-hmm. You can get along with people that are different than you. So that kind of general message. Whereas she's now the fish out of water, where this is kind of their territory.
Yeah.
And once she kind of then unleashes, she sleeps in the pile, her hair goes crazy, she becomes so much more accepting, and, then the girls kind of band together and they have their little moments. I thought it was so well done, so cute as well. Like they had the little kind of like names, and I just thought it was really well done. It was well handled. It's not like on the nose kind of in your face like feminism. It's just there because it does work for the story. It allows the girl characters to grow, but it also, with what they're going through, it allows like the dads and guy to kind of grow and work out their problems as well. So I thought it really, it worked in the story that it's telling. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's. I'm trying to think it. If like I definitely think it passes the Bechdel test, in that like there are like many female characters. They all have names, and I'm pretty sure they talk about something other than the men at some point.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like, even though that is their key objective of the film. And with the Thunder Sisters, we get that kind of like this great performance from Cloris Leachman, where she kind of just gets to go like wild, whether it's like,
when
you're not sure if she's asleep and she's got her eyes wide open, just going, or like we get this, like what the characters assume is this babble of a senile old woman about this.
Yeah.
Almost like Amazonian warrior tribe. It all turns out to be true, and we get that reveal that not only has she got like, well, I thought it's just gonna be a throwaway joke when I think she's at a dinner table at one point, and we see that she's got some kind of like rat beast living on her head, and then it turns out that it's Wigasus, like, goes off and does her bidding for her, we get this amazing, like, so what I love, there's something about the soundtrack anyway, because it's done by like Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo, and like scored a load of Wes Anderson stuff. But we get Haim doing the Thunder, Feel the Thunder, like the Thunder Sisters tune. I'm just going to play a little bit because I think it's a super fun little track.
It's good.
Thank you. So what did you think about the music in this film? Like, do it, like, I know sometimes like in animation, like it can really sell a film, and especially in comedy, like it can float into the background. But what did you think of Mark Mothersbaugh's soundtrack for The Croods?
I actually really liked it. I thought like the music suited like every scene pretty well. And when we did have like the songs come in, it was the right kind of song in the right kind of moments, and it really just worked well together.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely actually really liked and enjoyed the score, and specifically that for the Thunder Sisters. It's so epic.
Yeah. It kind of feels...
I was just sitting there like, you know, bopping around, dancing. It's like, it's such a fun tune. But I think like, yeah, I think they actually hit most of the notes pretty well, because it really flowed.
Yeah. It's like
in a really good way. Like, that's probably the best way I can describe it, but it just worked.
Well, I think it's that thing that, like, I watched it in the cinema last night, and like, I didn't notice it. And I think like that is sometimes like a true test of a score, is like, it's obviously helping like the scene progress and like kind of make it like helping you emote, or kind of like giving you hints at what's going on. But it's not like I'm like, it's not overtly like, here is the score. Like, do you know what I mean? Here it is. Here's the music. Yeah, I thought that was an absolute, like, I don't know, great little touch to the film. So is there any specific scenes that you would like to, like, talk about with this? Is there, like, certain scenes that, like, stood out to you, Marcy?
I loved the scenes with... Grog and Phil, their banter had, like, I think it was so well done. I don't know if they did their voices separately or if they were in the same room, but whatever the case, like, it just worked so well. It's just so, it was so entertaining, where I'm sitting here going, I need my Nicolas Cage and Peter Dinklage buddy cop movie now.
Yes, please. Yeah.
I think kind of their heart to heart, where they kind of have that realization of like, did we just become best friends? Yep. That whole scene, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
As well as, I guess, the Thunder Sisters sequence, which is awesome as well.
Yeah, they become the banana bros, right? They're like this kind of, they're both obsessed with bananas.
I loved it.
So
it's adorable.
This film, like, I guess we should kind of talk about the fact that, like, when this came out in America, like, during November, I think, last year, it was, like, reported at the time that, like, obviously there was all this talk throughout the pandemic of, like, what's going to be the movie to, like, save cinema, essentially. And when this opened, it had, like, a staggeringly good opening weekend, like, and I think, yeah, from like a six.
People just wanted something to see.
Exactly. So, yeah, it was a.
Why not see a fun family film?
It was a $65 million budget with a $191.2 million return.
That's not too bad.
It's not, yeah, it's not too bad at all. Especially for like a film that very much, like, a lot of the reviews I've read for this are like, did we need this? Like, what? Like, was anyone calling out for The Croods 2, especially after like a blatant sequel? But then I guess that's discounted the fact that like The Croods has like lived on TV, I think, like ever since, or like at least for like a few seasons. So it's like a kind of like Croods animated TV show. So, yeah. Like,
but I feel like the first film was pretty popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely for at least, you know, a few years afterwards, and it's still, you know, on rotation and you still hear about it. And it's like, I you know, when I saw it, I thought, oh, they surely got to do a sequel. It's pretty, you know, fun and enjoyable. And then, you know, eventually we did. I was like, is it too late? No, I still enjoyed the shit out of this movie. I don't really care what anyone says.
So, what? Yeah, what, like, sorry, I'm so hot, my mind just went blank. So obviously this film, like, I think it had a lot of like production issues, like with kind of like they were planning a sequel. I think the original director, Kirk D'Amico, was set to come back, didn't come back. Like, and I think it's kind of been kicking about, and like, it was like initially slate. It's like one of those ones that like I think even when I found out it was coming out, like it's like it's coming out in 2020. I was like, until I see a trailer, like I'm not quite convinced that this is actually happening. And I know that Kat Dennings was originally supposed to voice the character of Dawn, as opposed to Kelly Marie Tran. Which, I don't know. I guess would have been different. Like
very different.
Yeah, I like what Kelly Marie Tran did. So let's talk about the animation and specifically the character design on these weird and wonderful animals that we get in this film. What do you think about the animation in this film?
I think much like the first one, like at least the human design, the Croods, it's so wacky. Mm-hmm. It's like this very weird kind of vision of like the top heavy. Yeah. And at least when I first saw it, it took me a bit to get used to it. But by now it's like, that's how they look. It's all good. But the creature designs are so insanely unique.
Yeah.
Those wolf spiders, they made me like spiders. If they were wolf. I like kind of the weird inventive things of, kind of putting hybrid animals together, like there was a hippopotamus crocodile or something in there.
Yeah.
And the really big cat they have, I can't remember its name. But I thought they were really, really interesting and intriguing. Like, there's something interesting to look at. It's like, what is this? I don't know.
Well, I think, like, the first film, this is, like, you cannot deny how, like, visually exciting this is. And, like, they kind of, like, just get the paint pots out and really throw them on the screen. And it's just got this, like, I don't know, beautiful technicolor to it. That
it's very, very colorful. It kind of has that transition of kind of the Wizard of Oz type approach with the dark and dreary. Then they find this new place. Oh, it's all vibrant and colorful. I thought that worked really well, because when you see this new place with all, it's so colorful and so intriguing. You're like, what are all these foods? Why are they so big? What are these animals?
I think an animal that really stood out for me is it's kind of like woolly mammoth cows. I think they call them.
Yeah, like, I was thinking that. It was, I don't know what they called them. Mammoth cows or something?
No, they called them like woolly moomoths or something like that.
It was something funny, but they were so cute.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It really adds to this. It kind of makes you feel like, I guess nobody's probably calling for this to be a trilogy, but like, there is something exciting about like this weird and wonderful world they've created. And you can tell like from the animate standpoint, they probably had like a lot of fun. Like they're kind of like, we'll get the story like done and then like have fun. And there are animated sequences in this. Like I think like that one where they are going through eating stuff. Like,
yeah.
It's just so fun, like just kind of.
It's so like crazy,
but
it works. I love how over the top like the characters' mannerisms are, and then they're like, "Oh, what's this feeling? You're full of food." That kind of like slump ending is great.
Well, we get that moment. We get like the moment, and it's like the camera, like obviously. It's animated. There is no cap, but like you still get the effect of a camera, and it's like the camera spinning round, and it keeps changing, like who's seeing it, or like people like biting in stuff, and it's got this like it almost like harkens back to like psychedelic animation throughout this. There's this kind of like very psychedelic feel to it, especially like this kind of breaking through from the grey world into this bright and vibrant world. And yeah, it's like I love that. It kind of as I said, like that the way the title sequence is done, where like the Croods and New Age is actually within the environment that they're in, I thought was like a really effective way. And it I don't know, it doesn't feel like a minute of this film is kind of wasted. I never found myself looking at my watch going like, this is overly long. Like, I know we're living in a time when, like, what is it, space, like another belated sequel, Space Jam, A New Legacy, pushes 2 hours running time, whereas this is kind of an hour and 35 minutes, we're out. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like...
it goes through really quickly, which I think that's a sign that it's at least an entertaining movie, if anything else.
Is there any, like, issues you have, like, with this film? Is there any kind of, like, bugbears you have?
It's hard to say, because I actually just really enjoyed it. Like, it's hard to say, like, you know, it's not a perfect film by any means. But for me, I don't think a film really needs to be perfect for you to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I had fun with everything. Like, maybe there could have been extra development bits here and there. It sort of feels a little bit rushed at parts, but it's hard to really fault something when you just actually just have fun and enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like it doesn't really affect how my enjoyment of the film was, I guess.
So I've really, like, had, like, a new appreciation for, like, animated films, especially, like, kids' films, like, since becoming a parent. I'm like, especially something like this, I'm like, I can't wait to watch it, like, with my son, like, when he's, like, kind of old enough and excited about it and stuff like that. And I guess one of the themes throughout this and the first one, maybe not so much, I don't know. I guess this one deals with it, but, like, the kind of, like, father-daughter relationship in the first one is, like, that is kind of, like, the linchpin of the story and him accepting.
Mm.
And I guess it's kind of carried on over to this one, but it's more about...
Yeah, because it's sort of like they're ready to kind of live by themselves now. Yeah. And he feels like he's going to lose his daughter and how dare he take her away. Meanwhile, he forgets he's got another daughter.
Yeah, that is a kind of, that very much felt a bit sequel baity to me, being like, it's going to be the dawn of, what is her name?
I can't remember the little girl's name.
Yeah. But Sandy. I kind of love Sandy, that's it. Sandy, who is voiced by Kaylee Crawford, who I'm assuming is the director's daughter. I imagine that's probably how that works.
But I like how kind of at the end where it's like they're moving out, but they're literally just across the little bridge and he's sobbing and crying. It's so funny. I love it. Just the way he like portrays that. It's just so perfect.
So I guess the person
one of those gags
we haven't spoken about throughout this is Nicolas Cage. What did you make?
Yeah.
What do you make of Nicolas Cage's voice performance in this?
I thought he was awesome. I loved it. I don't feel like he phoned this in at all, and I don't think he did with the first film either. I think there's kind of a fondness for the character. But I feel like he had fun doing it because it's just so enjoyable. There's so much inflection in his voice that to me, he's not just saying lines. He's actually putting a lot into it. And as I said, like the banter between the fathers works so well.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think he's a fairly strong presence in the film.
Yeah.
Like, I think Krug is a very kind of funny character, but I really like how he sort of takes that approach as a voice actor. And I'd love to see him do more voice work because I think he just nails his character perfectly. It's just so good.
Well, yeah.
He's believable as a big oaf kind of caveman dad.
Well, if you look at the kind of voice acting he's done, so it's more so in... It seems to be like the last 4 or 5 years with Teen Titans Go to the Movie. He obviously finally got to voice Superman.
Yeah.
Spider-Man Into Spider-Verse. Again, like, fantastic casting. And like the original one of these. And like you said, I think Cage's like performance in this, he captures this great sweetness to the character and like this innocence. But like, Yeah. He doesn't for 1 minute sound like he's phoning it in. He sounds like he's having fun. He sounds like he sells the character really well, and he kind of, it's got the perfect amount of like kind of like bombastic like cageisms of him like going like, it gives him license to shout, but it's never too much. It's never it doesn't feel like they're letting him off the leash. They're very much like, no, we've got a tight grip on this. Like, we've hired you for a reason, and like we're gonna dial back like the crazy like volcano eruption that Cage can give.
When he needed to kind of turn it up, he does, and it works. But I really think like he brings a lot to this character, and it feels like, you know, there is a, like I said, there is a fondness there. But overall, I just found it really enjoyable. And I think he really helps make that character enjoyable. And his arc in this, I think, is a good one. Especially, like, his interactions with the Betterman family.
Yeah.
But again, give me my Nick Cage and Peter Dinklage movie already.
Before we start to wrap this up as well, I guess, like the other members of the cast we kind of didn't really speak about. I don't know. I think what this film does really well is it gives everyone their chance to shine.
Like, exactly.
It very much feels like an ensemble piece. Like, the first one, like, very much felt like it was Emma Stone and Nick Cage's film, like, because it was kind of those two butting heads. Whereas this... like the one who probably gets the shortest shrift is Clark Duke, because his character is very much just there for the occasional like joke and stuff like that. Whereas everyone else like has this arc, like, do you know what I mean? And there's kind of, there's conflict coming from all different angles and with different characters, and it's like the interplay between them. And we get that great scene where it all comes to a fore at the dinner table where we get I guess that scene's a great one to talk about. Emma Stone and Ryan Reynolds, like, how do you think they do in this?
I think they're fine. Like, it pretty much just carries over from the first one as well, and it feels like, again, they kind of really know these characters and they just kind of slide into those roles. But I think they definitely bring a lot of like charisma to it. And it's hard to picture like any other voices. Like, I think they're those characters, and for me it works really well. And I think actually everyone was pretty damn solid in the film. And like you said, it's more ensemble this time, so everyone kind of does something and they interact with each other. And I don't think we really touched on it, but having kind of the two sort of teenage female characters, where you kind of at first expect they're going to kind of be rivals guy, but instead they become like BFF straight away, and it's such a refreshing change that these two are like, you know, they've like sisters now. It's something that was really, really different and good. And, you know, again, those two bounce off each other really well. Like, there's the escape scene from you know, going out beyond the wall was really good. It was really funny.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, that the fact that, like, and the film knowingly does it right in the fact that you get Eep kind of like looking like annoyed, and he's like, she's like saying to her, he's like, you're a girl, like, I never knew you're a, and it sets you up to me, oh, it's going to be this rivalry, and I'm so glad that it subverts that, and they instantly like fall in love as friends and have this amazing day out and kind of like get drunk on honey, essentially, and she gets like the bee sting and stuff like that. And it's like, it would be so lazy and easy to do like those two rivaling,
the typical
it is that thing. And I think it probably rings a bit more true as well, especially like in this thing of like that, like class divisions and stuff like that, that it will be like the parents like butting heads, and it's the Bettermans that that want Guy for their daughter and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? It kind of feels like something that's like lifted from like an 80s movie or something like that.
And you kind of get the the hint that kind of Dawn and Guy do see each other as kind of like siblings.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, with Dawn and Eep becoming like best friends, it's like this big happy family. It's very cute. I liked it.
Amazing. So let's talk about, and it's probably a hard one to do for this film because he is animated. But one of the questions I always ask is, does Nick Cage have bad hair in this film?
Oh, he does. He's animated to have bad hair. It's not great hair. He's even got the hair all over his chest.
Yeah, there is a joke in this. Weird. There is a joke in this film that made me very triggered when Phil Betterman says to him, like, "Oh, Grug, you can take off your fur pelt," and he's like, "Already have," just because he's got a hairy chest, and
he's just got a hairy chest.
No word of a lie. This Saturday,
and
you're
like triggered.
Yeah, this Saturday just passed. I had a barbecue at my house and some people around, and somebody said to me, "Oh, you can take your jumper off if you want." And I was like, it's when I saw that line delivered in the cinema, I was like, why do I relate to Grug? Why do I relate to a caveman?
You're a caveman. I'm sorry.
That's it, I guess. A big old hairy caveman. So does Nick Cage have a crazy voice in this film? Does he get to go wild with it, or is he restrained?
A little bit, but not like crazy.
Yeah.
I think, as we said, I think he kind of has the right amount for the character.
Exactly. Yeah, as we mentioned, this doesn't get to Vampire's Kiss, like, kind of make you questioning, like, why is he doing that voice? Or, it's not like Peggy Sue Got Married, where actors are like, I'm not doing this film with him if he is doing that voice. I agree with you. It's a kind of restrained Cage performance.
Mm.
And I guess one of the things that many people go to a Nick Cage film for, that reels them in, is, does Nick Cage freak out in this movie?
Yes. I think he does several times, actually.
Yeah.
He's very distressed over being the fish out of water with these new people.
Mm-hmm.
He might lose his daughter. You know, he's kind of being manipulated. So he does lose it a little bit a few times. I think his big freak out is when he turns full, like, caveman. And forehead comes out and he's so angry.
Yeah, I love that kind of, especially, like, because you get that thing of him, like, he's been schmoozed and, like, in the sauna all day. And, like, he's got a back, like, essentially a back brace to make him stand up straight. Mm-hmm. And he's now got a man bun and stuff like that. And, yeah, and I thought that, yeah, that's, like, a great bit of, like, surreal. Like animation as well, like, that he's like, oh, I'm going to de-evolve into like an even like more primitive version of the human I am.
So
is Nick Cage the greatest actor of all time?
Yes.
Perfect. Let's leave that there.
I think I summed up pretty much all of that. So yeah.
Well, would you recommend, if people have not thought to check out Croods: A New Age, that they go either, I don't know, depending on where they are in the world, do they rent, do they go to the cinema? What are your thoughts?
I think it's a pretty fun film to check out, especially, you know, if people really enjoyed the original, like, this is a pretty good follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, like, between this and the first one, I'd say they're on par. Like, I think they're both really good films, really enjoyable and fun.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. Check out, you know, Nick Cage's voice acting. Check out everybody else, the animation. It's just a fun film. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I guess one of the things is, a lot of people, like they're pitting this up against, like, Luca and the Mitchells versus the Machines, which is, like, there, but like, I haven't seen Luca, but the Mitchell's Machines is fantastic. But like, don't feel like they're different beasts, do you know what I mean? And I feel like the Crude to New Age is, it sets out what it wants to do and it does it really fun. And it's
exactly,
it perfectly manages that balance of giving everyone something like that is exciting. And I think there are jokes for everyone. We're not just in the fact that there are like kind of pointed jokes for adults, but like there's weird things. Like the stuff I found myself laughing at was like stuff to do with like the grandma's hair and stuff like that, which is like, I could definitely see is the more like probably juvenile stuff that I found funny than like the jokes where they're going like, here's one for the dad. So if anything, like that stuff's a bit more like, all right, I see what you're doing. Like a bit of an eye roll here. Well, Marcy, thank you so much for coming to join me. Please tell me, the listeners, all about all the stuff you do and where people can find you and keep up to date with everything you're doing.
Oh, goodness. Well, thank you so much for having me on your show. It was a pleasure to talk about the god, Nick Cage.
The one true god.
My one true. I think I'd say he's like god tier man. I put Kurt Russell up in that god tier as well.
Oh, yes, please.
They're my men's. But yeah, I can be found at supermarcy.com, which is SUPERMARCEY. That is my website, which is called The Super Network. It has all my film reviews and other people's film reviews and about a billion zillion podcasts that I do.
I always find it like quite hard to keep a track of like you've kind of just got this like, it feels like every day of the week you've got like a new like podcast thing or like some kind of commentaries going on, stuff like that. It's amazing to see.
It's almost nonstop, but not we have one weekly podcast, which is the To Be Tuesdays podcast, where we find something random on the very free streaming service Tubi, and we do like the audio commentary, or if you're a Patreon, we do the video version. So we pretty much sit, watch a film. Usually we haven't seen it before, and that's a lot of fun. We definitely enjoy that. And all our other shows release once a month. So every week in the month, we have a different show.
Perfect.
For that week. So I've got the Super Podcast, which has been running for 12 years, which is really weird to think about. But we sort of do like our bonus episodes, but every month we do our fan voted commentary. We have a Facebook Facebook group, where everyone kind of votes on we have a theme every month. So whatever wins the poll, we do the commentary on. We have the King's Own podcast, which is all about the Stephen King adaptations.
Perfect.
So we're kind of in the middle of that. And so we have Podcasters of Horror, which is all about horror anthologies. So we've just finished covering Masters of Horror, and we're moving on to Fear Itself, so that's another one. And then finally, our latest podcast, which is called the Ozsploit Cast, we've decided to go from the very beginning in 1970 and watch all of the Ozsploitation films from like the very beginning. So we've only dropped 3 episodes so far.
Amazing.
We're covering about 5 films per episode because there's so many. And it's pretty much me watching a lot of Australian movies I've never even heard of or seen. And it's insane.
I'm going to have to hit you up afterwards for like kind of like if you have like a little recommend list or something like that, because this is definitely Australian cinema, like besides the kind of obvious ones, are like it's kind of a bit of a blind spot for me, so I'll be tapping you out for some Ozsploitation classics.
I've noticed it probably is with a lot of people, especially Ozsploitation being very sort of specific but also not. And I'm like, wow, these movies are very interesting. of course, there's, you know, you go back 50 years, they're going to be problematic.
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of just have to look at it in the right way and understand what the context was then.
Of course.
And I don't think you need to kind of condone it, but I think the understanding kind of helps. But yeah, I have, I'm on Letterboxd, I think it's super_Marcy, and I'm keeping tabs of Tubi Tuesdays and all the other some of the other podcasts we do, but I do my Patreon exclusive podcast once a week. I'm trying to, and that is the more unfiltered adulty stuff that, you know, I'd like to offer bonus stuff to our Patreons. Amazing. So yeah, I do a bit of everything, but pretty much if you look up Super Marcy or supermarcy.com, you'll find everything, or the Super Network. And that's it. I get really awkward talking about all the things I do because I feel like there's way too many. No. You know, I've also branched out on YouTube and do like our podcast previews there, but also other stuff. And I'm just doing way too much. And I don't know how I have the time.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming and getting caged in with me.
Anytime. I enjoy talking about movies. I enjoy talking about Nicolas Cage. All of it.
And there we go, that was my chat with Super Marcy, all about Crude: A New Age. If you've seen this film and would like to have your say on it, please don't hesitate to get in touch on all the socials. So that is Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Letterboxd, all at Caged In Pod. Or you can always drop me an email, which is cagedinpod@gmail.com. As for next week on the podcast, I'll be joined by Ella Kemp to talk about Judd Apatow's 2009 comedy drama, Funny People, which has a fantastic turn from our Coppola connection that week, which is Jason Schwartzman. It's a great chat, and Ella comes up with a theory that I guess is out there, but I'd never heard it, of kind of the film being a modern day Great Gatsby. So yeah, that's the kind of areas we go to in that conversation. So very much hope to see you next week for that one. As always, if you have enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. As always, I've been Petros Patsilivas, your guide through the crazy world of Nicolas Cage. Remember to keep it caged in, and I'll catch you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This podcast is presented by the Breadcrumbs Collective, home of the PodCharles Cinecast, Caged In Coppola Connections, A Drooptown Limerie Maine, Franchised, and many more to come. Our shows are all presented ad-free and made possible by listeners like you. Please support our shows by subscribing, leaving ratings and reviews, and becoming patrons at patreon.com. If you'd like to learn more about Breadcrumbs, head over to breadcrumbscollective.com.
Breadcrumbs. It's more than a podcast network. It's family.